Oh, it's too bright. It's too bright. Help. Okay. Okay. Problem solved. Okay. First stop, the gas station. Get some fucking gas. Get some motherfucking. It's time to get gas. And then get gassed. I'm gonna get gas. Alright. Man, it's already 9. Shit. Where did today go already?
And I would trade it for the world, world, world. And I just so
Just listen to Jadakiss make the Jadakiss noise.
Damn real.
Yo. Now imagine that being like your signature fucking thing. Like that's the fucking thing. Like,
why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets?
I mean, I guess like good on him for doing something memorable, right?
Damn real. Yo. Why is Jadakiss?
But as rap noises goes, it's like it's damn near the bottom, I think, right?
Damn real.
I mean, it's no. Yo.
Why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets? Why is the industry designed to keep the artists in debt? And why them dudes ain't riding if they part of your set? And why? Damn real. Yo. Why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets? Why is the damn real. Yo. Why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets? Why is the industry designed to keep the artists in debt? And why them dudes ain't riding if they party is set? And why they never get it popping but they party to death? Yeah, and why they gon' give you life? Damn real. Yo. Why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets? Why is the industry designed to keep the artists in debt? And why them dudes ain't riding? Damn real.
I want more of a ooh. Yo, you know?
Why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets? Why is the industry designed to keep the artists in debt? And why them dudes ain't riding if they party is set? And why they never get it popping but they party to death? Yeah, and why they gonna give you life for a murder? Turn around, only give you 8 months for a burner. It's going down. Why they selling niggas CDs for under a dime? And if it's all love, daddy. Damn real. Yo. Why is Jadakiss as hard as it gets? Why is the industry designed to keep the artists in debt? And why them dudes ain't riding if they party is set?
I can't. All right. Okay.
Notice that you never seem to get laid much on. Well, the phone lines are open. If you want to call in.
with your questions for me, I guess. I expect no one will have any questions because everything's pretty self-explanatory at this point. Oh, jeez. All right, we're going to the 858 here. Which button answers the phone? There we go. Hello, who is this?
Hey, it's Denzel from San Diego.
Hi, how are things going in San Diego?
Okay, I guess.
Yeah? Is it, like, super hot and stuff down there already? Is it already, like, pretty much summertime, or what?
I feel like 90% of the year is pretty much summer, like, 70 to 80, typically, and then in August it goes up to 90.
Yeah.
But it's not, as of now, it's not necessarily very hot.
Yeah, it's kind of warming up around here, but there's still, like, we had a little bit of rain this week, which was super weird. And San Francisco is always fucking miserable and foggy and cold, which is actually kind of nice sometimes, but yeah. What's on your mind?
Oh. Well, I just wanted to ask, like, it seems like the giant bomb is moving in a direction where it's kind of widening its range of topics that it's covering, especially regarding some of the premium stuff you guys are doing. I'm wondering if you guys are moving towards opening, like, a door for, like, wider content coverage outside of games.
I think we're keeping our options open. It's, you know, we're approaching topics that we have, like, actual interest in and not, like, forcing it, basically. So it's sort of like, okay, well, it makes sense for us to do, like, a wrestling podcast because we want to do that. And, you know, there hasn't been a movie podcast in a long time because those guys haven't gone to see a bunch of movies lately. So just kind of naturally dropped off a bit, you know? Like, I don't think you'll see us, like, writing episode recaps of television shows or like, hey, this movie trailer came out. Like, I don't know that that's necessarily something that makes sense for us. It seems kind of like, I don't know, like, that. It feels like a cheap thing to do to, like, glom on to these other things when it comes to just, like, trailers and official assets and stuff just to kind of get traffic. Like, that's not what I want to do. So, like, we're kind of approaching it from, like, yeah, like, you know, people sign up for the site, like, we kind of understand that, like, there's a certain aspect, or there's a certain segment of the subscribers that just want to, you know, that are interested in our take on other things. So, you know, the wrestling podcast has actually done really well for us, numbers-wise, and it's fun to do. So it's one of those things where it's like, that might actually, at some point, that gets to a size and an interest level that, like, if we made it free, then suddenly we could actually sell ads on it and make a bunch of money that way, too. So, like, that's, like, from the business side, like, there are options there for, like, other podcasts. But in terms of just, like, are we going to start writing news stories about, like, album releases or movies or TV, like, probably not. That, I don't think that makes a lot of sense for what we're doing, but, like, for podcasts, like, for us, like, the podcast is, like, the biggest thing we do by kind of, like, an order of magnitude, and it seems like people want more of that, so we're kind of thinking along the lines of, like, what are some new podcast-type things we could be doing for those sorts of people.
That's awesome. Can I ask a follow-up, or should I just...
No, go for it.
Talking off the line? So have you thought about finding, like, podcasts to put on the site to host that aren't necessarily the staff, like you do with 8-4, and just having it, like, specifically produced foresight, although it's not necessarily on topic, like the dude that tested do.
Like, maybe, like, I'm not opposed to it. Like, our system actually makes it, so I could actually do that for any podcast in the world right now without telling the person running the podcast that we're doing it. Because like, the way that the 8.4 stuff works on the back end is we just post the URL to their RSS feed and point at their episodes from our system, and then it kind of generates that sort of stuff. So, like, yeah, like, in terms of, like, a network like that, like, I think I would be kind of into it. We just need to figure out, like, right now, I want a page that is, a couple of things. Like, so, right now, we're working on an update to our podcast pages, which are not, I mean, most people just get it through RSS, so whatever, but, like, for the people that are on our site and want that information, we're adding two fields to the podcast page. One for, like, show notes, so if there's something specific, like, hey, you know, we talked about this thing, here's this, that might make more sense for, like, I don't know that we'll do that for the Giant Bombcast, but, like, the wrestling podcast could be like, hey, we talked about these shows, here are the URLs to this YouTube video, or whatever, and then another section for, like, the sponsor stuff, because there's always offer codes and dumb shit like that, so, like, just a clear, concise way of, like, hey, here are the sponsors for the show. In case you want that information for whatever reason. So, like, we're working on that. But what I want to do is, like, if you go to those podcast pages right now, there's no indication of what the overall show feed is. So we have to write the name of the show in every single name of every episode and stuff like that. Like, I want to get to a point where when you go to those pages, you see, like, oh, this is the feed for premium podcasts, or this is the Power Bombcast feed, and it's about wrestling. You know, just something little, like a little blurb there that says, like, what you're looking at, more than just the current episode. And then I want to have, like, kind of a podcast homepage that sort of shows people, like, everything that's going on in podcasts. Like, that'll only make sense if we have a lot of regular shows. Like, right now, you know, we don't have that many regular shows, so it'd be overkill today, but, like, with kind of how I'm thinking about podcast stuff, like, it'll make sense to have a page like that down the line.
For sure. Thanks, man.
Yep. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Gotta get my talking voice. Hello, how's it going?
Hi, first time, long time, love the show.
Thanks. How's it going? Where are you calling from? What's your name? Who is this? What's happening?
Hey, my name's Jeff. I'm in Rochester, New York.
Fantastic. And what's on your mind?
Hey, so I'm kind of curious when you're reviewing a game, if knowing the number of developers that worked on it kind of changes your mind about it. Like, knowing that Fez really only had, like, two people really working on that over the 5 years or whatever, if it makes it easier to look past its faults. But, you know, kind of like with the Assassin's Creed Unity, you know, knowing hundreds of people worked on that, if it makes it kind of even more disappointing that no one really stood up and took a stance saying, hey, this game is not ready yet.
I don't know that it necessarily, like, impacts you in the reviews sense. I think it's easier, like, when you're talking about the scope of a game or something like that, like, you know, if like, one person made all of Axiom Verge, you look at them and go, okay, that's, like, super impressive for one person, but, like, it's still $15, it's still this long of a game, like, the particulars of the time investment, the monetary investment, like, the quality, the smaller games you would take a little easier because of the price point, and I think that is still probably the larger divide in terms of just, like, well, you know, you're gonna, like, if a mediocre game is $15, like, at least it's not $60 or something like that. You know, it's a weird imperfect science when it comes to that, and because value is such a hard concept to like, when you're dealing with, like, a mass audience, like, what does $60 even mean? Like, for some people, maybe they saved up for months to get that money together. For other people, maybe they, you know, they buy 10 games a week and who cares, you know? So you can only really look at it in terms of, like, relatives instead of, like, well, a $60 game should be this. It should be more like, well, you know, the big ticket games can be over here. These kind of smaller ticket items are maybe over here. But that stuff's merging together in different ways all the time. You know, like Steam, like the range of prices on Steam has made like the value conversation in reviews even more broken than it already was. But in terms of who worked on a game, like I usually don't even know. Like when I played Fez, I had heard of Phil Fish, and I'd never met him. I'd seen one build of the game at that point and kind of knew it was a smaller team game or something, but like it didn't, I don't really think it had an impact on the review.
Right, yeah, because I know playing some other games like Fez or even there's a game called Banished that came out, I think, last year, and just kind of following its development and knowing that only one person made that entire game really impressed me and made it easier to go, oh, okay, well, yeah, of course they didn't include that feature. They were probably working on, you know, shifting the game rather than fixing this one little tiny thing.
Totally, yeah. I think that's a meaningful conversation kind of outside of the review context. But I think once you're kind of, like, getting it into, that review zone and thinking, like, am I going to recommend this to people or not, like, the story behind its development really doesn't matter. So it's kind of, you have to kind of make sure you're putting that stuff aside as best you can.
Right. Well, thanks for answering my question, Jeff.
Yep, see you around. Bye. Next song. Nope. All right. Hello, you're talking in my car. How is it going? What is your name? Who is this? Where are you? Okay. All right then. Please turn down your radio. All right. So much for that. Someone in the 508 didn't feel like talking. We'll try the 603 instead. Hi, how are you? Who is this? Where are you?
Hey, it's Josh from New Hampshire. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty well. It's nice out here today. How's it going in New Hampshire?
Oh, it's terrible. It snowed yesterday.
Fantastic. That's
so I am the guy who sent in the Star Fox 2 cartridge.
Ah, okay, yeah. That crazy thing.
I understand that you can't do any videos of it, of course, but I was wondering if maybe you or Dan had a chance to boot it up, take another look at it.
So I have played it before, on not actual hardware. I messed around with some Star Fox a while back, and Dan grabbed it. I think he was going to check it out. I'm not sure if he has yet or not, but I think he is in possession of the cartridge at this time. How hard was it to get that thing together? Is it just... like, did you desolder an existing board, or did you buy some repro board, or?
So, the board that you use comes out of Stunt Race FX.
Ah, okay.
So you need to buy a copy of that game, which are cheap. They're like $6 tops.
Yeah.
And then you have to desolder one of the chips on it that stores the game itself, the ROM.
Yeah.
And then you solder in the replacement chip, which has Star Fox 2 on it, and then it uses the rest of the chips on the board.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah, the craziest thing to me is just how complete the game is. I mean, I've played through it a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's pretty much done. It's almost shippable in its state.
Yeah, I played that at, I guess it would have been CES, if not like the very first E3 or something. Nintendo had it out there for people to play. Like, they built these little, cockpit-style chairs and just had a few kiosks where you could just check out Star Fox 2. Like, they were, you know, planning on shipping it. They showed it publicly, you know. They showed it publicly. They were planning on putting it out. And then, yeah, I guess, you know, as the platform got older and older and they got closer and closer to replacing it, you know, they just took a look at it and said, you know, this game's expensive to produce and maybe we should just punt on this and save it for the next hardware or something. It's a weird case.
Yeah. One of the things that I read, who knows how true it is or not, was that they wanted to push all the 3D stuff to the N64, which was supposed to come out much earlier than it ended up coming out.
Right.
And they didn't want to confuse the marketplace.
Yeah, I think that holds up. Like, I believe that to actually be the case, yeah. That they just... Yeah, because the Ultra 64 was supposed to come out super, way earlier than it did. Like, you know, if you think about even just, like, Killer Instinct and Cruisin' USA having basically ads for that hardware in it, and then think about how long it took even after that to get out there. Like, it was just it was just such a weird situation. And then, like, those games came out and didn't even really seem like arcade quality versions of those games on the N64. It was like a really just... Yeah, that whole system is just such a weird thing. But yeah, that's totally Nintendo, right? I mean,
yep.
They're more than willing to just go, fuck it! And wait on some stuff. Yeah. Well, cool, Josh. Cool. Thanks a lot for sending that in. It's a pretty rad... I hadn't seen any of that, like, actually, like, soldered into a board before. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's one thing to boot it up on your computer and play it as a ROM, but I think it really does make it a lot cooler if you can slap it in a cartridge and throw it in a real, you know, Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Play it that way.
Totally. All right, man.
Cool. Have a great day.
You too. I'll see you around. I guess I got time for, like, one more. I'm on the Golden Gate Bridge, so... Hello?
Yeah, hello, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm calling from Arizona. Real good. Look, I'm just curious. I'm a long-time admirer of your work, but I really don't understand why you, of all people, aren't, and I'm sorry if this is a sore topic, but aren't pushing back harder against folks like Lee Alexander and Ben Kuchera, who've been really maligning traditional gamers. I mean, you know, there's 1 out of 1,000 trolls that are real idiots.
Uh-huh.
And I know you guys, I'm sure your inbox gets filled with them. But the vast majority of us are not neckbeards, are not basement dwellers, are not losers, are not misogynists.
Yeah, it's...
So why don't you know that. So why don't you push back harder?
I'm not really familiar with their work at this point. Like, I'm not really spending my time going out there and reading what other people are writing about those sorts of things at this stage, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's just not, right. Like, that sort of coverage is not super interesting to me at the moment. So, like, they're welcome to say it. I think that, you know, they're obviously welcome to their opinion, but I'm not familiar with kind of what their positions are. To even really...
Well, unfortunately, their opinion is being picked up by a lot of people who have very big megaphones, and that's what worries me. It's tarring the whole industry.
Hmm.
And, you know, developers are scared to death to say anything about this. And I don't blame them, because you guys, you know, if there's 200 million online gamers and only 1 out of 100,000 is an idiot, that's still, you know... 400,000 idiots you have to deal with. So,
yeah,
you know, I can understand your hesitance, but this really hurts on our end.
Well, I'll keep that in mind, I guess, but it's, you know, it's one of those things, I think there's going to be a lot of differing opinions on those sorts of topics, and, you know, like, I've certainly, you know, like, now... In the 20 years or so that I've been doing this, like, I, you know, yeah, I've had death threats. I've had a lot of really negative interactions with people over the internet. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, certainly,
right.
certainly
right.
that
I mean,
stuff
you,
exists.
Yeah, you, right. Well, I wish somebody who knows the industry as well as you would set straight the people who are trying to paint a very bad picture of a very inclusive group of enthusiasts.
Hmm. Well, I think that the industries are very different. Like, when you talk about knowing the industry and you talk about knowing the people that are using the products of that industry, you're kind of talking about two different things.
I only know the people. I only know the people who are being called misogynists and haters.
Sure.
And who are being painted as some kind of evil trolls who ought to just go off and, you know, while I guess the industry proper elevates to a higher level because, I don't know, you know, because what? Because everybody else has capitulated to this kind of idiocy?
No.
That's why we should do it too?
It's really more that gaming has expanded in a lot of different ways and there are a lot of smaller segments of it. You know, if you look at television and movies, they've all gone through similar situations where, I'm going through a tunnel, I don't know if I'll lose you here, but...
When Taylor Swift crossed over, she didn't start calling all her country fans a bunch of rednecks, right?
I guess not, but at the same time, I think the people you're talking about, have they ever, like, did they cross over, or have they always been true to this exact thing? Like, you're prescribing these opinions that these people have as speaking for... everyone and everything, and that's not the case. No one does anymore. Just like no one can speak for all of film, no one can speak for all of movies, games have widened and gotten big enough to where there's kind of something for everyone, and okay. Gaming is bigger.
Did you go to GDC, or were you at PAX?
No, I went to PAX.
IGDA, they came down with both feet on the side of massages. We all just go away. They showed this. They showed that, you know, hey, Ash, what's your plan video to the audience. And that was wrong. That's IGDA. They do speak for the industry. But they say they do. And nobody's pushing back. Most of all, the people that we've loved. I mean, you know, you've got such huge gravitas because of what you did years ago.
I think that you're looking at that stuff.
You've got gravitas to make a dent in this narrative, and you know that you're trying to control this narrative.
You're turning this into a highly politicized thing when it's instead a very personal thing for the developers that are getting attacked, and to say that there's like. Attempts to control the narrative. Like, you're just using the same language that people use when they're talking about the American political system, and it's not that. It's people that are out there working, trying to feed their families, making the products that they think that people want to play or products that they want to make, that are finding a hard time with that because they're getting attacked, because they're, you know, because the internet has become such a tumultuous and sometimes cesspool of a place. That's apparently controversial, that they're just trying to get out there and make a product. So they're striking back with, yeah, I mean, the hey Ash, what you playing thing is, you know, like they're just taking a sort of a lighthearted approach to it, which only serves to enrage the people that think that this is some serious political issue, when it's actually not. Like, it's one of those things where people are approaching this thing like some massive fucking conspiracy, that there's like some cabal working together to do this, but that's actually insane. And the problem with that is like a lot of people out there that have gone down that road, when you tell them that, hey, that's not the case, their response is, well, of course you would say that. You're part of it. And it's like, okay, well, fine. Then you don't want to actually have an argument. You don't actually want to, like, learn anything or go anywhere. These people have made up their minds in a lot of those cases and have gone all the way down that road, all the way down that conspiratory road. And at some point, there's just no reasoning with them because they're not looking for reason. They're looking to constantly poke at and prod at people.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, it's easy to get over emotional about it. I get a little emotional about talking to you right now. But, you know, when I read the gaming press that I've supported for years and years, do nothing to defend what my likes are, what my preferences are.
Mm-hmm.
I do tend to get emotional about it. But I just, you know, there's this old saying that for bad people to win, it just means good people have to do nothing. And I feel like there's too many good people who are not doing what they should do, which is to say, you know, to the law and order SVU writers of the world, guys, you got it wrong. These people are not like that at all.
Yeah, but those people aren't trying to get it right. They're trying to make a television show that people watch. Like, they're, you know, they're ripped from the headlines stuff happens all the time. And I bet if you go through any time that they've done that, they've never once get it right. Like, they're just trying to make entertaining television, and they'll take liberties wherever they can. And you can fight that stuff, but at some point, it's like, it's not their job at Law and Order to try to paint things in an accurate or sympathetic light, right? So it's sort of a weird thing to get mad about, because I think anyone who, like, looks at television, it doesn't, that stuff doesn't actually matter. And anyone that's, like, taking, like, life advice or, like, views of the world from, like, an episode of Law and Order, like, they're not going to think deeply enough about anything to, like be swayed one way or the other, right? I mean, they're, at some point, they're kind of not worth saving. They're a little too far gone. If they're like, oh, well, I guess all gamers are terrible because Law and Order said so. Like, that's, I don't think that that's a scenario that's happening all that often. And I think, like, the game industry is still big. There's still a lot of big companies making big company style games. There's smaller people that are making games. There are people that are trying to make games that have something to say, and that's fine too. And generally speaking, it's never been better in a way.
No, you're right. But my problem is that, and you saw a lot of this at GDC, with the people who commented, the developers who attended who commented, it's toxic right now. Everybody is scared to death to come on the wrong side of this. And so there's this implicit, well, you know, those guys who are more traditional, they're just not the folks we want to work with, or we want to write about, or we want to support. And that's, to me, that's, I mean, it's not, you know, I don't think there's some cabal that's doing this. But I think it is a reality that there's a lot of good work that is, you know, there's probably, these guys are censoring themselves now. They're afraid to talk about what they really feel about the industry.
Well, I think
just don't see this as being a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's not a, like, we're at a place where there are some people that get viciously attacked by, like, a lot of random anonymous hate when they do speak their mind. So yeah, like some people get silenced by that sort of thing and get to a position where they can't feel free to speak their mind because people are getting death threats. Like people are, you know, that stuff's terrible. Like at some point you have to think like, you know, it's not about like standing up for yourself and all this other stuff. Sometimes you have a fucking family that you need to make sure stays fed, and that stuff's more important. Sometimes the people close to you are more important than like standing up and taking a stand for the video game industry, which will actually be fine on its own. It's the internet that has a problem. Like the anonymity of the internet and all that sort of stuff is crazy.
Look, Jeff, are you sure it's going to be fine on its own? I mean, do you remember Saturday morning cartoons when you were a kid? They're different than they are now, right?
Well, they don't exist because
that's because the SJWs they won that battle.
No, it's
now they destroyed the they destroyed the cartoon industry by putting all these restrictions on violence. I mean, you know, you watch cartoons from the 30s to the 50s, they're completely different. The social justice warriors got their way and destroyed cartoons. How do you know that's not going to happen with games?
The thing that destroyed Saturday morning cartoons is that kids stopped watching them because video games and the internet became more popular.
Well, you look at what happened during the 70s. There was legislation passed. All because of the activity of some activists who got a lot of stuff banned. And if you remember, you read the guys who used to work for Hanna-Barbera. They're sitting there 30 years in the industry. They're 60 years old. They're sitting there listening to 20-year-old progressives telling them how to make cartoons. And you tell me that's not going to happen to gaming. You give me some reassurances that's not going to happen to gaming.
I think that gaming has a rating system in place where games can speak to all people, and at some point, you know, anyone can release a video
game. That's what the cartoon industry did. They had their own internal rating system to work for about 5 years, and then the government and the FCC brought down their hammer. But you tell me that's not going to... You give me some reassurance that that's not the way we're on right now. The thing you're saying about those trolls, you're right about the trolls, but that's 1 out of 10,000. What I would like is the 99 out of 100 at GDC and IGDA who malign traditional gamers. That's what I don't like. And the 99 out of 100... who say, oh, you're one of those people? Well, we're not going to review you. We're not going to cover you. We're not going to fund you. You're describing people trying to make a living. You know, what about the people that are simply want to make traditional games, maybe appeal to a male demographic, you know, who likes to see cleavage? You know, like this is some big offense nowadays. Tell me about this, because you know it's the 99 out of 100 who are against that, and it's the 1 out of 10,000 who send the death threats. That's what worries me.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's certainly, I'm sure it's not a majority of people that are sending death threats, but it's enough of them to where it's causing a real fucking problem. And that's a problem with the entirety of the internet that's larger than video games, that's larger than any one form of media. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't look at Twitter as much as I used to, because fucking why would I want to do that? Because it's full of a lot of garbage, you know? And it's like more and more people are getting chased off of social networks by people like that being completely shitty.
Yeah, well, they're also being chased away from... Oh, no, what's the right way to put it? No, they're not being chased away. They're being self-centered. People are deciding for their own careers, for their own benefits, a little less cleavage, a little less, ribald humor, a little less whatever, maybe a little less violence. You know, and we're just basically, you've read the articles of people who are saying, you know what? What I'm doing now is I sit down, I write a joke, and then I sit down and think, what's going to happen when this gets out? And they start self-centering themselves. How in the world did we get to the point at this day and age that we're going to censor ourselves? Because there's a bunch of people who have such thin skins, they can't take anything other than the jokes they like and the positions they like politically. And goodness gracious, could we, you know, half the games that we loved as kids, could they be made today without causing some kind of an uproar?
I mean,
you think the breast bounce, in Dead or Alive, you know, you probably set the age to 99.
And you can still think
that would happen today?
Dead or Alive 5 came out like... Dead or Alive 5 Last Round came out like not that long ago, and it has all those same breast bounce options. They're even crazier now.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm not up to date.
I mean, yeah, that stuff still, yeah, that stuff still exists.
That frightens me.
I'm
old enough to have seen what social justice warriors did to Saturday morning cartoons. And I have no reassurances that very same thing is not going to happen to video games.
Well, if you look at Saturday morning cartoons, like they're reliant on a distribution model of like major television networks and that sort of stuff, and that's not video games. And we're at a point now where anyone can publish a video game on Steam and do a lot of different stuff. And so, like, if the market wants that sort of content, the market will someone will meet that demand.
Are you saying the market didn't want Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck?
I think that
the market is the reason that Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck cartoons are not made anymore.
We
get this problem that's got no violence, no gunshots, no anything.
Well, I mean, at some point you're talking about, you know, toys used to be made out of metal and, you know, I used to be able to go out and buy guns and now you don't do that, you know. You can take that to mean that everyone's gone soft, or you can take it to mean like, oh, maybe people are a little more enlightened and they've spent a little bit more time thinking about this and maybe they don't want kids to grow up with realistic firearms anymore. Like, I kind of miss that a little bit because I think fake guns are fucking rad, but, you know, I'm certainly willing to listen to reason on that front and go like, yeah, I guess I could see why maybe this is not how we want to be raising our children. I think Saturday morning cartoons is a pretty different situation because that stuff lasted well into the 80s, well into the 90s, in a different form, and that's what I grew up with, was a lot of the, you know, stuff in the 80s, Pac-Man cartoon, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, still had access to a lot of that Bugs Bunny material, and not the stuff that was, you know, was it Bugs Bunny dressed up like Hitler or whatever it was, that, you know, they'd obviously scrubbed that stuff away by that point. But it's at some point, distribution has changed. Like, the thing you're going to run into now isn't like, oh, well, you know, the people at the heads of these networks made this decision and now this stuff is completely gone. It's going to be, oh, well, if the people running these distribution channels have decided that this content is not something they want to support and fund anymore, then someone will start another one. You know, that you can't put that genie back in the bottle when it comes to the internet. Like, that stuff gets out. That stuff will get made. And I'm not, like, I'm not worried that, like, traditional gaming is going to suddenly dry up and go away for the reasons that you're stating. If it's going to dry up and go away, it's because it's not a profitable business anymore. And when you look at the big AAA games that get developed these days, they're safe. They're safe the same way movies became safe. Blockbuster movies and summer movies and that sort of stuff, where it's the safe, sequel-driven bullshit that just gets made over and over again. And I still like a lot of it, but it's, there's no big left-field surprises anymore. The mid-tier game dried up because the business doesn't make sense anymore, not because someone's like, ah, there are too many games with people shooting other people. So instead, all the people that used to make those games at companies like THQ and Midway and all that other stuff went to independent developers and started doing their own thing. And because they're smaller teams with less money riding on it, they can take those sorts of risks on a different level than even those mid-tier games could. And that's why you see a lot of diverse concepts and a lot of different things coming out of that, because as between that end of things and then also the tools being used to make games getting easier and easier and easier to use, you have people that never would have made games 10 years ago that are now totally able to make something. And that's not a, like, you know, that's not a bad thing. That's a fantastic thing. And it results in people with different viewpoints, and that's fine, but not every game is for me, and not every game has to be.
No, sure. But what is bad is when those guys try to set the tone for the entire industry and try to say, what you guys have been doing, no, that's not elevated enough. We need to elevate the art. And by elevating the art, we mean you do it our way. You fit our sensibilities instead of the sensibilities of the audience you've been pleasing for 30 years.
Believe me, that's
what bothers me.
No one at Activision is paying attention to what some small-ass indie game is doing. No one Disney or Warner or these other companies are going like, oh, well, what does this guy have to say about, like, it's a different playing field. Like, when it comes to this sort of stuff and the topic, like, I had a developer from a big company ask me at one point, like, well, what do you think about all this stuff that's been going on online with his death threats and all this other stuff? Because none of us even ever think about it. No, it never even comes up. It's one of those things that plays... You're right.
You know the inside baseball much better than I do as far as the developers go. What I don't like is that I'm getting beaten up on the cultural level. So, you know, this is a culture war. And in the culture war level, they're beating me up right and left. They're insulting me, my kids, my friends, everything. And I don't see anybody with a big megaphone bouncing back. I mean, I make my own stupid YouTube videos. They get nothing. Nothing. You know, we've got this tiny little voice. And meanwhile, you know, these guys are going on TV. They're inspiring TV. They're writing in all of the big, you know, the big trade journals, Time, Newsweek, places like that. We're sitting here saying, hey, please don't beat me up. I'm just doing what I want to do. And don't call me a misogynist. Don't call me a racist. And who's standing up for us? I mean, you know, you got a good point. There is no cabal. There is no, it's not a conspiracy. But who's standing up for us when a whole mess of people decide we're going to, you know, we're going to make our livings off of maligning you guys.
It's a segment of people who have not had anyone to stand up for them for a good long time that are getting slightly more attention than they've had before. Like, you're viewing it as they are getting all the attention and that it's an attack on you and all that other stuff, but really it's a slight adjustment.
They just have the bigger voices. They have the bigger voices now. I mean, you tell me of a publication. I follow all the publications that are pro and anti. And all the pro ones are huge with enormous distributions. All the anti, I got it backwards. The folks that are maligning us have the bigger distribution by far, by a factor of 100. Now, you know, when's that stop? When do people come around and say, you have a little measure of decorum in their audience and in treating their audience as though, you know, we're not a bunch of troglodytes? I mean, I don't see that happening to any of the big sites. And frankly, I don't see it coming from you, and I'm disappointed. You know, you impressed the hell out of everybody by leaving, you know, what was it, 10, 15 years ago? Impressed the hell out of everybody. You know, it was a golden moment that lives forever. When's that going to happen for somebody who's willing to say, hey, you idiots, would you shut up already? These are an audience. Maybe you don't like them. Maybe not. But you know what? They're an audience. They deserve the respect that any audience has.
I think that, you know, you're finding that, like, the conflation of everyone on that side of things is starting to separate. And it's one of those things that, you know, when people got behind, it's the confusion in, like, this whole fucking Gamergate thing is that some people tried to stand by it even as it got proved over and over again. It's like, no, like, people in the name of this thing are harassing and doing really fucking negative things. Like, you know, when people tried to say it was about ethics and then try to come to me and say, like, no, this is about ethics and we're really disappointed because, you know, you had such ethics before. It's like, no, you don't fucking understand that it was never, that stuff was never about ethics. And the people that tried to rile it up and make it about ethics were only trying to make things harder for the people that they perceived to be saying things that were damaging to them and their way of life. And that's the thing that
I'll admit that when people started suspecting that there was some shabby goings on between indie developers and journalists, I'll admit they shouldn't have done what they did. But they only did that because they thought there was some shabby goings on, that there was some, you know, I'll wash your back, you'll wash mine. So even though the reaction was ridiculous, it did start, much as you want to say it, if there had been no suspicion that there was some wrongdoing of an ethical nature, none of this would have happened.
And that's, you can find suspicion for anything anywhere you look. I've spent, like, when we ran GameSpot, we tried up and down to write reviews that were bulletproof, that would be, no one would ever be able to say, oh, there's a bias here, oh, there's this, there's that. And people did anyway. No one fucking cared. It was never about, you know, like, and the number of hours that went into trying to bulletproof those reviews and try to make, you know, those kind of common arguments go away was a huge waste of time, because the people that might make those arguments aren't making it from a rational place. They're making it because they're fans of a console, they're fans of this, they're fans of that, and that same mentality is driving a lot of this stuff on a different level now.
I agree. I mean, there's not a city news editor who doesn't get, you know, 28-page single-space rants a week. You know, that's just the nature of publishing. And you have to, I mean, you know, that shouldn't be, the reaction to the trolls of the world should not define how you treat your whole audience. And that's what seems to be going on here.
I think that,
whole audience. I mean, at GDC, there was no subtlety at GDC. It was, you're either on our side or on their side. And that is very troubling.
Most people at GDC went to talks that were about AI and graphic design. Like, you know, you're talking about GDC as if it was some big flashpoint. And, like, it's not. It's people making business deals.
I've seen the pictures. All the people with funny hair and hats, they were at the feminist ones. And all the serious guys were at the... you know, we're listening to Mark Sermon, or what's his name, the Doom guy. So, but the fact is, they didn't, you know, IGDA, they did not sit down and come up with a session on, hey, what's appropriate to do and not to do with a game journalist. They did not come up with any kind of a guideline, but they did come up with about, what was it, 15 different sessions on you know, basically the role of, you know, of transgender in gaming, the role of, you know, of new audiences. I mean, there was a boatload of stuff if you were in favor of, you know, quote unquote, elevating the game industry to some kind of a new direction. But, you know, if you wanted to address the issue of, hey, you know, when does it get a little dicey, you know, what you've been doing with the journalists, you know, while you're trying to get your indie game published. There was not a session for that.
Well, your mistake there is assuming that, like, game developers care about that sort of stuff. They're in the business of selling games. And because they're in the business of selling games, Like, the onus of, like, that ethical transaction is purely on my side of things. Because people on the other side are trying to take advantage of every little thing they can. And if they can exploit anything and turn that into sales, then, hey, good on them. And so it's on us to, on some level to be like, okay, well, we're not going to, you know, we have our shit sewn up. We are not going to pay attention to that end of things.
I mean, that's fair enough. You know, twice a year, legal sends me stuff about the foreign corruptions policy, you know, and what we have to follow legally. And you guys don't have something like that. Good for you. But, you know, don't be surprised then if there isn't a segment of the audience that says, hey, buddy, I'm reading you, you know, for your honest opinion, not to hear, you know, you paraphrase a press release that somebody's whispered in your ear after sending you a laptop.
Yeah.
And that kind of transparency, that's if there had been no concern that kind of stuff was going on, then none of this would have ever happened.
The stuff you're talking about,
the overreaction to it was bad.
The stuff that you're talking about, though, like the case you're even talking about of like, hey, I'm going to send you an expensive item, and then you're